laying traps. It was a major plundering operation. We'd very much like to ask Asa some questions. I can imagine. Shed bit his lip. He thought hard. Sir, I can't tell you what became of Crag, but I think Asa took ship for the south. He went into a long song and dance about how Asa had come to him after falling out with Crag, begging to be hidden. One day he had gone out, returned later, badly wounded, had hidden upstairs for a while, then had vanished. Shed claimed to have seen him from a distance only, on the docks, the day the first ships sailed for the south. I never got close enough to talk, but he looked like he was going somewhere. He had a couple bundles with him.
Do you recall what ship?
Sir?
What ship did he take?
I didn't actually see him board a ship, sir. I just assumed he did. He might still be around. Only, I figure he would have gotten in touch if he was. He always came to me when he was in trouble.
I guess he's in trouble now, eh?
Maybe. The evidence isn't conclusive. But I'm morally convinced he was in on the looting.
You didn't see Crag on the dock, did you?
No, sir. It was crowded. Everybody always goes down to see the first ships off. It's like a holiday.
Was the Inquisitor buying it?
Damn. He had to.
An Inquisitor wasn't somebody you got off your back by selling him into the Black Castle.
The Inquisitor shook his head wearily. I was afraid you'd tell me a story like that.
Damn it. You leave me no choice.
Shed's heart leapt into his throat. Crazy ideas swarmed through his head. Hit the Inquisitor, grab the coin box, make a run for it.
I hate to travel, Shed, but it looks like either Bullock or I will have to go after those people. Guess who'll get stuck?
Relief swamped Shed. Go after them, Reverend Sir, but the law down there doesn't recognize the Brotherhood's right.
Won't be easy, will it? The barbarians just don't understand us.
He poured some wine, stared into it for a long while. Finally, he said,
"Thank you, Marin Shed. You've been very helpful."
Shed hoped that was a dismissal. He rose.
"Anything else, Reverend Sir?"
"Wish me luck."
"Of course, sir. A prayer for your mission this very evening."
The Inquisitor nodded. "Thank you." He resumed staring into his mug. He left a fine tip, but Shed was uneasy when he pocketed it. The Inquisitors had a reputation for doggedness. Suppose they caught up with Asa.
Chapter 24 Juniper, Shadow Dancing.
I think I was pretty slick, I told Goblin.
You should have seen that Shed, Pawnbroker cackled. A chicken sweating like a pig and lying like a dog. A one-man barnyard.
Was he really lying? I muse. He didn't say anything that conflicted with what we know.
What did you learn? Goblin asked.
I think he was lying, Pawnbroker insisted. Maybe by not telling everything he knew, but he was lying. He was into it somehow.
You keep hanging around the Lily, then. Keep an eye on him.
What did you learn?
Goblin demanded.
Elmo came in.
How'd it go?
Great, I said. I found out what happened to Raven.
What?
He and Goblin both demanded. He left town, by ship, the first day the harbor was open.
Darling, too,
Goblin asked. You see her around. What do you think?
Pawnbroker mused.
Bet that Asa went with him. Old Shed said they both left the first day.
Could be. I was proud of myself, catching him with that. Looks to me now like this Shed is our only outside loose end. He's the only one who knows what happened to them. No Shed, nobody to maybe tell Bullock or the Taken anything.
Elmo frowned. The suggestion was more in keeping with his style than mine. He thought I'd put it forward seriously.
I don't know. Sounds too simple. Anyway, we're starting to get noticed down there, aren't we?
Goblin nodded.
We're supposed to be sailors who missed our ship, but people are comparing notes, trying to figure us out. If Shed got killed, there might be enough fuss to get Bullock wondering. If he gets wondering, sooner or later the news would get back to the Taken. I figure we ought to save heroic measures for heroic circumstances.
Pawnbroker agreed.
That shed's got something to hide. I know that in my guts. Croker told him about the raid on the catacombs. He hardly blinked. Anybody else would have whooped off and spread the news like the plague.
Kingpin still watching him, I asked.
Him and Sharky and Tickle are taking turns. He ain't going to be able to poot without we know about it.
Good. Keep it that way. But don't mess with him. We just want to keep him away from Bullock and the Taken. I faded away into my thoughts.
What? Elmo finally asked.
I had an idea while I was talking to Shed. Bullock is our main risk, right? And we know he'll stick like a bulldog once he gets on a trail. And he's on the trail of this Asa character. So why don't we con him into going south after this Asa?
I don't know, Elmo muttered. He might find him.
What's he want him for?
Questioning about a raid on the catacombs. What kind of cooperation is he going to get someplace else?
Not much. Way I hear it, the cities down the coast think Juniper is a bad joke.
Anyway, we just want to buy a little time. And if he does catch up with Asa, I figure he catches up with Raven, too.
Ain't nobody going to bring Raven back. Not if he thinks the Taken are after Darling.
They tangle? I'll put my money on Raven. Cut out the only source of info, temporarily or permanently. See what I mean? And if he does kill Raven, then Raven can't talk.
How you going to talk Bullock into it? Elmo asked.
It's dumb, Croker. He's not going to go herring off after some minor suspect.
Yes, he will. You remember when we came here, he had to translate. How do you figure he learned the language of the Jewel Cities?
I asked him. He spent 3 years there looking for a guy who wasn't any more important than Asa.
Goblin said, This mess gets crazier every day. We got so many cons and lies going, I can't keep track of them anymore. I don't think we better do anything except cover our asses till the captain gets here.
I often had a feeling we were making things worse, but I could see no exit other than to keep coping and hoping.
Best way out, Elmo observed laconically, would be to kill everybody who knows anything, then all of us fall on our swords.
Sounds a little extreme, Goblin opined, but if you want to go first, I'm right behind you.
I've got to report in to Whisper, I said. Anybody got any brilliant ideas what I should tell her?
Nobody did. I went, dreading the encounter. I was sure guilt smoldered in my eyes whenever I faced her. I resented Elmo because he did not have to endure her daily fits of ire.
Bullock was almost too easy. He was packing almost before I finished handing him my line of bull. He wanted that Asa bad. I wondered if he knew something we did not, or if he'd just worked up an obsession with the mystery of the invaded catacombs.
Whisper was more of a problem. She told me,
I want you to send somebody with him.
I had had to tell her something, so had told her most of the truth. I figured the chances of anybody tracking Asa and Raven were nil, but she seemed a little too interested, too. Perhaps she knew more than she pretended. She was, after all, one of the Taken.
Elmo picked 3 men, put Kingpin in charge, and told him to stick a knife in Bullock if he looked like needing it. The captain and company were, I was told, in the Wolander Mountains, 100 miles from Juniper. They faced a slow passage through tough passes, but I began to anticipate their arrival. Once the old man showed, the weight would be off Elmo and me.
Hurry, I muttered, and returned to tangling our skein of deceits. Chapter 25 Juniper Lovers Maren Shedd fell in love in the worst possible way, with a woman far younger who had tastes far beyond his means. He charged into the affair with all the reserve of a bull in rut, disdaining consequences, squandering his cash reserve as though it came from a bottomless box. His boxes dried up. 2 weeks after he met Sue,
He made a loan with Gilbert, the moneylender. Another loan followed that, then another. Within a month he had gone into debt farther than he had been during the winter. And he did not care. The woman made him happy, and that was that. Compounding his negative attributes was a tendency toward willful stupidity and an unconscious confidence that money could be no problem ever again. Wally's wife, Sal, visited the Lily one morning, grim and slightly ashamed. "Marin," she said, "can we talk?" "What's the matter?"
"You were going to help with rent and stuff?"
"Sure. So what's the problem?"
"Well, I don't want to sound ungrateful or like I have any right to expect you to support us, but our landlord is threatening to throw us out on account of the rent hasn't been paid for 2 weeks. We can't get work on account of nobody is putting out any sewing right now."
"The rent isn't paid, but I saw him just the other day." It hadn't been just the other day. He had forgotten. His mother, too. Her servants' salaries would be due in a few days, not to mention Lisa's.
"Oh, my," he said. "I'm sorry. I forgot. I'll take care of it." "Shed, you've been good to us. You didn't have to be. I don't like seeing you get into this kind of mess."
"What kind of mess?"
"With that woman. She's trying to destroy you."
He was too puzzled to become angry.
"Sue? Why? How?"
"Give her up. It'll hurt less if you break it off. Everybody knows what she's doing."
"What's she doing?"
Shed's voice was plaintive.
"Never mind. I said more than I should already. If there's ever anything we can do for you, let us know."
"I will. I will," he promised. He went upstairs to his hidden cash box and found it barren. There was not a Gersh in the place, upstairs or down. What was going on?
"Lisa, where's all the money?" "I hid it."
"What?"
"I hid it. The way you're carrying on, you're going to lose this place. You have a legitimate expense, tell me. I'll cover it."
Shed goggled. He sputtered.
"Who the hell do you think you are, girl?" "The girl who's going to keep you in business in spite of yourself. The girl who's going to stop you from being a complete fool with Gilbert's woman."
"Gilbert's?"
"Yes. What did you think was going on?"
"Get out," Shed snapped. "You don't work here anymore." Lisa shrugged.
"If that's what you want."
"Where's the money?"
"Sorry. Come see me when you get your common sense back."
Shed raged around the common room. His customers clapped, egging him on. He threatened. He cajoled. Nothing worked. Lisa remained adamant. "It's my family," he protested.
"You go prove that woman isn't Gilbert's whore. Then I'll give you the money and walk."
"I'll do that."
"What if I'm right?"
"You're not. I know her."
"You don't know shit. You're infatuated." "What if I'm right?"
He was incapable of entertaining the possibility. "I don't care."
"All right. If I'm right, I want to run things here. You let me get us out of debt."
Shed bobbed his head once and stormed out. He was not risking anything. She was wrong. What was her game? She was acting like a partner or something, like his mother had after his father died and before she lost her sight, treating him like he did not have twice her experience of business and the world. He wandered for half an hour. When he came up from his melancholy, he saw he was near Sailmaker's Hall. Hell, he was there. He'd just go see Gilbert. Make a loan so he could see Sue that night. Little bitch Lisa could hide his money, maybe. But she couldn't keep him away from Gilbert. Half a block later, he began to suffer conscience pangs. Too many people depended upon him. He shouldn't make his financial situation worse. "Damned woman," he muttered. "Shouldn't talk to me that way. Now she's got me doubting everybody." He leaned against a wall and fought his conscience. Sometimes lust pulled ahead, sometimes the urge toward responsibility. He ached for Sue. He should not need money if she really loved him. "What?" he said aloud. He looked again. His eyes had not deceived him. That was Sue, stepping into Gilbert's place. His stomach sank like a falling rock. No, she couldn't. There must be an explanation.
but his traitor mind started cataloging little oddities about their relationship, particularly mauling her penchant for spending. A low-grade anger simmered over the fire of his hurt. He slipped across the street, hurried into the alley leading behind Gilbert's place. Gilbert's office was in the back. It had an alley window. Shed did not expect that to be open. He did hope to sneak a peek. The window was not open, but he could hear, and the sounds of lovemaking in no way approximated what he wanted to hear. He considered killing himself on the spot, considered killing himself on Sue's doorstep, considered a dozen other dramatic protests, and knew none would move either of these villains. They began talking. Their chatter soon killed Shed's holdout doubts. The name Maren Shed came up.
"He's ready," the woman said. "I've taken him as far as I can. Maybe one more loan before he starts remembering his family."
"Do it, then. I want him wrapped up. Make the hill steep, then grease it. He got away from Crag." Shed shook with anger.
"How far down do you have him?"
18 liver and nearly another 10 in interest."
"I can work him for another 5.
"Do it. I have a buyer hot to go." Shed left. He wandered the buskin for hours. He looked so grim, people crossed the street. There is no vengeance as terrible as the vengeance a coward plots in the dark of his heart. Late that afternoon, Shed strolled into Gilbert's office, all emotion locked back in the shadows he had discovered the night he had run with Crag's hunters. "I need 15 leva, Gilbert, in a hurry." Gilbert was startled. His one eye opened wide. 15? What the hell for?" "I've set up a sweet deal, but I have to close it tonight. I'll go a couple extra points if you want."
"Shed, you're into me big now. I'm worried about you covering that."
"This deal goes off and I can clear it all."
Gilbert stared.
"What's up, Shed?"
"Up?
You're awful sure of yourself."
Shed told the lie that hurt most.
"I'm going to get married, Gilbert. Going to ask the lady tonight. I want to close this deal so I can make the lily over into a decent place for her."
"Well," Gilbert breathed. "Well, well, well. Maren Shed getting married. Interesting. All right, Shed. It's not good business, but I'll take a chance. 15, you said?"
"Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. I'm really grateful."
"You sure you can meet the payments?"
"I'll have you 10 leva before the end of the week, guaranteed. And with Sue helping out at the Lily, I'll have no problem clearing enough to cover the rest."
Gilbert controlled a thin smile.
"Then you won't mind putting up collateral more valuable than your word?"
"Sir?"
"I want a lien on the Iron Lily."
Shed pretended to think hard. Finally,
"All right. She's worth the risk."
Gilbert smiled the smile of a hungry stoat, but managed to look worried at the same time.
"Wait here. I'll have a note drawn up and get the money."
Shed smiled nastily as Gilbert departed. Chapter 26. Juniper, Lovers Parting. Shed pulled his rig into the alleyway behind Sue's place, raced around front, pounded on the door. It was a class place for the buskin. A man guarded the entrance from within. 8 women lived there, each in her own apartment, each in the same business as Sue, each commanding a substantial premium for her time.
"Hello, Mr. Shed," the door guard said. "Go on up. She's expecting you."
Shed tipped him, something he hadn't done before. The man became obsequious. Shed ignored him, mounted the stair. Now came the difficult part, playing cow-eyed lover when he was no longer blind. But he would fool her, just as she had fooled him. She answered the door, radiantly beautiful. Shed's heart climbed into his throat. He shoved something into her hand.
"This is for you."
"Oh, Maren, you shouldn't have." But if he hadn't, he would not have gotten past her door. "What a strange necklace. Are these serpents?"
"Real silver," he said. "And rubies.
It caught my fancy. Ugly, but the craftsmanship is superb.
I think it's gorgeous, Marin. How much did it cost?
Too much, Shed replied, smiling sardonically. I couldn't tell you. More than I should have paid for anything.
Sue did not press. Come here, Marin.
She must have had orders to play him carefully. Usually she gave him a hard time before surrendering. She began disrobing. Shed went. He took her rough, something he had not done before. Then he took her again. When it was over, she asked,
"What's gotten into you?"
"I have a big surprise for you. A big surprise. I know you'll love it. Can you sneak out without anyone knowing?"
"Of course, but why?"
"That's the surprise. Will you do it? You won't be disappointed, I promise."
"I don't understand."
"Just do it. Slip out a few minutes after I leave. Meet me in the alley. I want to take you somewhere and show you something. Be sure to wear the necklace."
"What are you up to?"
She seemed amused, not suspicious. Good, Shed thought. He finished dressing.
"No answers now, darling. This will be the biggest surprise of your life. I don't want to spoil it."
He headed for the door.
5 minutes, she called.
"Don't make me wait. I'm a bear when I have to wait. And don't forget the necklace."
"I won't, dear."
Shed waited nearly 15 minutes. He grew impatient, but was certain greed would bring Sue out. The hook was set. She was playing with him.
"Marin?"
Her voice was soft and musical. His heart twisted. How could he do this?
"Here, love."
She came to him. He enfolded her in his arms.
"Now, now, enough of that. I want my surprise. I can hardly wait."
Shed took a deep breath. "Do it," he yelled inside. "I'll help you up." She turned. "Now." But his hands were made of lead.
"Come on, Marin."
He swung. Sue slammed into the wagon, a mule the only sound she made. He hit her again as she bounced back. She sagged. He took a gag from the wagon, forced it into her mouth before she could scream, then tied her hands quickly. She began kicking when he went for her ankles. He kicked her back, nearly let anger carry him away. She quit fighting. He finished binding her, then propped her on the wagon seat. In the darkness, they looked like man and wife about some late business. He did not speak till they were across the port.
"You're probably wondering what's going on, darling."
Sue grunted. She was pale and frightened. He retrieved his amulet. While he was at it, he stripped her of jewelry and valuables.
"Sue, I loved you. I really did. I would have done anything for you. When you kill a love like that, you turn it into a big hatred."
At least 20 leva worth of jewelry, he guessed. How many men had she destroyed?
"Working for Gilbert like that, trying to steal the lily, anything else I could have forgiven. Anything."
He talked all the way up the hill. It distracted her till the black castle loomed so large it could no longer be overlooked. Then her eyes got huge. She began to shake, to stink, as she lost all control.
"Yes, darling," Shed said, voice pleasantly rational, conversational. "Yes, the black castle. You were going to deliver me to the mercy of your friends. You made a bet and lost. Now I deliver you to mine."
He halted, climbed down, went to the gate. It opened immediately. The tall being met him, wringing spidery hands.
"Good," it said. "Very good. Your partner never brought healthy game."
Shed's guts knotted. He wanted to change his mind. He only wanted to hurt and humiliate Sue. But it was too late. He could not turn back.
"I'm sorry, Sue. You shouldn't have done it. You and Gilbert. His turn will come.
Marin Shed isn't what everybody thinks." A whining noise came from behind Sue's gag. Shed turned away. He had to get out. He faced the tall creature. It began counting coins directly into his hand. As always, Shed did not barter.
In fact, he did not look at the money, just kept stuffing his pockets. His attention was on the darkness behind the creature. More of its kind were back there, hissing, jostling. Shed recognized the short one he'd dealt with once. The tall being stopped counting. Absently, Shed put the coins into a pocket, returned to his wagon. The thing in shadow swept forward, seized Sue, began ripping her clothing. One yanked the gag out of her mouth. Shed started packing his rig.
"For God's sake, Maren, don't leave me!"
"It's done, woman. It's done," he snapped his traces. "Back up, mules." She started screaming as he turned toward the gate. He did not look. He did not want to know. "Keep moving, mules."
"Come again soon, Maren Shed,"
the tall creature called after him. Chapter 27 Juniper, Banished. The summons from Whisper caught me unprepared. It was too early for the daily report. I'd barely finished breakfast. I knew it meant trouble. I was not disappointed. The Taken prowled like a caged animal, radiating tension and anger. I went inside by the numbers, stood at a perfect attention, giving no excuse for the picking of nits, in case whatever it was not my fault. She ignored me for several minutes, working off energy. Then she seated herself, stared at her hands thoughtfully. Her gaze rose, and she was in complete control. She actually smiled. Had she been as beautiful as the lady, that smile would have melted granite. But she was what she was, a scarred old campaigner, so a smile only ameliorated the grimness of her face.
"How were the men disposed last night?" she asked.
Baffled, I responded, "Excuse me? You mean their temper?"
"Where were they stationed?"
"Oh, that was properly Elmo's province, but I knew better than to say so. The Taken do not tolerate excuses, sound though they may be. The three men on the ship, south with Bullock, looking for that man Asa. I worried about her having sent them. When I do not understand the motives of the Taken, I get paranoid. Five down in the buskin, pretending to be foreign sailors. Three more down there, watching people we've found especially interesting. I'd have to double-check with Elmo to be positive, but at least four more were in other parts of the city, trying to pick up something of interest. The rest of us were here in the castle, off duty. Wait, one man would have been down in the Duke's secret police office, and two would have been at the enclosure, hanging around with the custodians. I was with the Inquisitors most of the night, picking their brains. We're scattered pretty thin right now. I'll be glad when the captain gets here. We've got too much going for the available manpower. The occupation planning is way behind." She sighed, rose, resumed pacing.
"My fault as much as anyone's, I suppose."
She looked out a window for a long time. Then she beckoned. I joined her. She indicated the Black Castle.
"Just whiskers short. They're trying to open the way for the Dominator already. It's not yet time, but they're getting hurried. Maybe they've sensed our interest."
This Juniper business was like some giant, tentacled sea beast from a sailor's lie. No matter where we turned or what we did, we got deeper into trouble. By working at cross-purposes with the Taken, trying to cover an increasingly more obvious trail, we were complicating their efforts to deal with the peril of the Black Castle. If we did cover well, we just might make it possible for the Dominator to emerge into an unprepared world. I did not want that horror upon my conscience. Though I fear I tend not to record it that way, we were embroiled in substantial moral quandaries. We are not accustomed to such problems. The lot of the mercenary does not require much moralizing or making of moral decisions. Essentially, the mercenary sets morality aside, or at best reorders the customary structures to fit the needs of his way of life. The great issues become how well he does his job, how faithfully he carries out his commission,
how well he adheres to a standard demanding unswerving loyalties to his comrades. He dehumanizes the world outside the bonds of his outfit. Then anything he does or witnesses becomes of minor significance as long as its brunt is borne outside the company. We had drifted into a trap where we might have to face the biggest choice in the company's history. We might have to betray 4 centuries of company mythos on behalf of the greater whole. I knew I could not permit the Dominator to restore himself. If that turned out to be the only way we could keep the lady from finding out about Darling and Raven. Yet, the lady was not much better. We served her, and till lately, well and faithfully, obliterating the rebel wherever we found him. But I don't think many of us were indifferent to what she was. She was less evil than the Dominator only because she was less determined about it, more patient in her drive for total and absolute control. That presented me with another quandary. Was I capable of sacrificing Darling to prevent the Dominator's return, if that became the price?
"You seem very thoughtful," Whisper said.
There are too many angles to this business. The custodians, the Duke, us, Bullock, who has axes of his own to grind. I had told her about Bullock's buskin origins, feeding her seemingly irrelevant information to complicate and distract her thinking. She pointed again.
"Didn't I suggest a close watch be kept on that place?"
"Yes, ma'am. We did for a while, too. But nothing ever happened, and then we were told to do some other things." I broke off, quaking with a sudden nasty suspicion. She read my face.
"Yes. Last night. And this delivery was still alive."
"Oh, boy," I murmured. "Who did it? You know?"
"We just sensed the consequent changes. They tried to open the way. They weren't strong enough yet, but they came very close."
She began to prowl. Mentally, I ticked off the roster for the buskin last night. I was going to ask some very pointed questions.
"I consulted the lady directly. She's very worried. Her orders are to let ancillary business slide. We're to prevent any more bodies reaching the castle. Yes, the rest of your company will be here soon, from 6 to 10 days, and there is much to be done to prepare for their arrival. But as you observed, there is too much to do and too few to do it. Let your captain cope when he arrives. The Black Castle must be isolated."
"Why not fly some men in?"
"The lady has forbidden that."
I tried to look perplexed. "But why?" I had a sweating, fearful suspicion that I knew. Whisper shrugged.
"Because she doesn't want you wasting time making hellos and briefing newcomers. Go see what can be done about isolating the castle."
"Yes, ma'am."
I departed, thinking it had gone better and worse than I had anticipated. Better, because she did not throw one of her screaming rages. Worse, because she had in effect announced that we who were already here were suspect, that we might have succumbed to a moral infection the lady did not want communicated to our brethren. Scary. "Yeah," Elmo said when I told him. He did not need it explained. "Which means we gotta make contact with the old man."
"Messenger?"
"What else? Who can we break loose and cover?"
"One of the men from the buskin."
Elmo nodded. "I'll handle that. You go ahead and figure how to isolate the castle with the manpower we have."
"Why don't you go scout the castle? I want to find out what those guys were doing last night."
"That's neither here nor there now, Croker. I'm taking over. Not saying you done a bad job, just you didn't get it done. Which is my fault, really. I'm the soldier."
"Being a soldier won't make any difference, Elmo. This isn't soldier's work. It's spy stuff. And spies need time to worm into the fabric of a society. We haven't had enough of that."
"Time is up now. Isn't that what you said?"
"I guess," I admitted.
"All right, I'll scout the castle. But you find out what went on down there last night, especially around that place called the Iron Lily. It keeps turning up,
just like that guy Asa. All the while we talked, Elmo was changing. Now he looked like a sailor down on his luck, too old to ship, but still tough enough for dirty work. He would fit right in down in the buskin. I told him so. Yeah, let's get moving. And don't plan on getting much sleep till the captain gets here. We looked at one another, not saying what lay in the backs of our minds. If the Taken did not want us in touch with our brethren, what might they do when the company hove in sight, coming out of the Wolanders? Up close, the Black Castle was both intriguing and unsettling. I took a horse over, circled the place several times, even flipped a cheerful wave at the one movement I detected atop its glassy ramparts. There was some difficult ground behind it, steep, rocky, overgrown with scraggly, thorny brush which had a sagey odor. Nobody lugging a corpse would reach the fortress from that direction. The ground was better along the ridgeline to east and west, but even there an approach was improbable. Men of the sort who sold corpses would do things the easy way. That meant using the road which ran from the Port River waterfront through the scatter of merchant-class houses on the middle slopes and just kept on to the castle gate. Someone had followed that course often, for wheel ruts ran from the end of the road to the castle. My problem was there was no place a squad could lie in wait without being seen from the castle wall. It took me till dusk to finalize my plan. I found an abandoned house a ways down the slope and a little upriver. I would conceal my squad there and post sentries down the road in the populated area. They could run a message to the rest of us if they saw anything suspicious. We could hustle up and across the slope to intercept potential body sellers. Wagons would be slow enough to allow us the time needed. Old Croker is a brilliant strategist. Yes, sir. I had my troops in place and everything set by midnight, and had two false alarms before breakfast. I learned the embarrassing way that there was legitimate night traffic past my sentry post. I sat in the old house with my team, alternately playing tonk and worrying and on rare occasions napping, and wondering a lot about what was happening down in the buskin and across the valley in Durtile. I prayed Elmo could keep his fingers on all the strings. Chapter 28 Juniper, Lisa. Shed had spent an entire day lying in his room, staring at the ceiling, hating himself. He had sunk as low as a man could. There was no deed too foul for him anymore, and nothing more he could do to blacken his soul. A 1,000,000 leva passage fee could not buy him a board on passage day. His name had to be written in the black book with those of the greatest villains. "Mr. Shed," Lisa said from the doorway next morning as he was contemplating another day of sealing study and self-pity. "Mr. Shed."
"Yeah."
"Bo and Lana are here."
Bo and Lana, with a daughter, were his mother's servants.
"What do they want?"
"Their account settled for the month, I expect."
"Oh." He got up. Lisa stopped him at the head of the stair.
"I was right about Sue, wasn't I?"
"You were."
"I'm sorry. I wouldn't have said anything if we could have afforded it."
"We? What do you mean, we?"
"Oh, hell. Never mind. Forget about it. I don't want to hear about it any more."
"Whatever you say. But I'm going to hold you to your promise."
"What promise?"
"To let me manage the Lily."
"Oh. All right."
At that moment, he did not care. He collected the monthly accounting from the servants. He had chosen them well. They were not cheating him. He suggested they deserved a small bonus. He returned upstairs for the money. Lisa watched him go, perplexed. He realized his mistake too late. Now she wondered why he had money today when he'd had none yesterday. He located his dirty clothing, emptied his pockets onto his bed, and gasped.
"Oh, damn, damn," he muttered. "What the hell am I going to do with 3 gold pieces?"
There was silver, too, and even a fistful of copper, but it was a gyp, a fortune he could not spend. Juniper law made it illegal for commoners to hold minted gold. Even incoming foreigners had to exchange theirs for silver, though foreign silver was as welcome as local. Lucky, too, for the Black Castle mintage was a decidedly odd coinage, though in the standard weights. How could he get rid of the gold? Sell it to some ship captain headed south. That was the usual procedure. He slipped it into his most secret hiding place, with the amulet from the Black Castle. A useless fortune. He assessed the remainder. 28 pieces of silver, plus several leva in copper. Enough to take care of his mother and Sal. Way short of enough to pry Gilbert off his back. Still be in the damned money trap, he whined. He recalled Sue's jewelry, smiled nastily, muttered, I'll do it. He pocketed everything, returned to the ground floor, paid his mother's servants, told Lisa, I'm going out for a while. First, he made sure Wally's family was cared for, then ambled down toward Gilbert's place. No one seemed to be around. Gilbert was not like Crag in that he felt he needed an army on hand, but he did have his bone breakers. They were all away. But someone was in Gilbert's office because lamplight illuminated the curtains. He smiled thoughtfully, then hustled back to the Lily. He went to a table back in the shadows, near where Raven used to sit. A couple of foreign sailors were seated there. Tough merchandise, if he'd ever seen it. They'd been around for some time. They said they and their friends, who came and went, had missed their ship. They were waiting for another. Shed could not recall having heard the name of their home port. "You men like to pick up some easy money," he asked. "Who doesn't?" one responded. And the other, "What you got in mind?" "I have a little problem. I've got to do some business with a man. He's liable to get vicious." "Want some backup, eh?" Shed nodded. The other sailor looked at him narrowly. "Who is he?" "Name's Gilbert, a moneylender. You heard of him?"
"Yeah."
"I was just past his place. Don't look like there's anybody there but him." The men exchanged glances. The taller said,
"Tell you what, let me go get a friend of ours."
"I can't afford a whole army."
"Hey, no problem. You two work out what you'd pay two of us. He'll come along free. Just feel more comfortable having him with us."
"Tough?" Both men grinned. One winked at the other.
"Yeah, like you wouldn't believe."
"Then get him." One man left. Shed dickered with the other. Lisa watched from across the room, eyes narrow and hard. Shed decided she was getting too much into his business too fast. The third man was a frog-faced character, barely 5 feet tall. Shed frowned at him. His fetcher reminded,
"He's tough, remember?"
"Yeah? All right. Let's go." He felt 100% better with three men accompanying him, though he had no real assurance they would help if Gilbert started something. There were a couple of thugs in the front room when Shed arrived. He told them, "I want to see Gilbert."
"Suppose he don't want to see you."
It was standard tough guy game playing. Shed did not know how to respond. One of his companions saved him the worry.
"He don't got much choice, does he? Unless that fat's all muscle in disguise."
He produced a knife, began cleaning his nails. The deed was so reminiscent of Raven that Shed was startled.
"He's back in the office."
The fat thug exchanged a look with his companion. Shed figured one would run for help. He started moving. His frog-faced companion said,
"I'll just stay out here."
Shed pushed into Gilbert's office. The moneylender had a sack of leva on his desk, was weighing coins one at a time on a fine scale, sorting out those that had been clipped. He looked up angrily.
"What the hell is this?"
"Couple of friends wanted to stop by with me and watch how you do business."
"I don't like what this says about our relationship, Shed.
It says you don't trust me.
Shed shrugged. There's some nasty rumors out there about you and Sue working on me to do me out of the lily.
Sue, eh? Where is she, Shed?
There is a connection, eh?
Shed let his face fall. Damn you. That's why she turned me down. You villain. Now she won't even see me. That ape at the door keeps telling me she isn't there. You arrange that, Mr. Gilbert? You know, I don't like you much.
Gilbert gave the lot of them a nasty, one-eyed stare. For a moment he seemed to consider his chances. Then the small man ambled in, leaned against the wall, his wide mouth wrinkled into a sneer. Gilbert said,
"You come to talk or to do business? If it's business, get at it. I want these creeps out of here. They'll give the neighborhood a bad name."
Shed produced a leather bag.
"You have the bad name, Gilbert. I hear people saying they won't do business with you anymore. They don't think it's right you should try to screw people out of their property."
"Shut up and give me some money, Shed. You just want a whine? Get out."
"Sure talks tough for being down 4-1, one of the men remarked.
A companion admonished him in another language. Gilbert glared in a way that said he was memorizing faces. The little man grinned and beckoned with one finger. Gilbert decided it could wait. Shed counted coins. Gilbert's eyes widened as the stack grew. Shed said, "Told you I was working on a deal." He tossed in Sue's jewelry. One of his companions picked up a bracelet, examined it.
"How much do you owe this character?"
Gilbert snapped a figure, which Shed suspected to be inflated. The sailor observed,
"You're shorting yourself, Shed. I just want quit of this jackal's lien on my place."
Gilbert stared at the jewelry, pallid, stiff. He licked his lips and reached for a ring. His hand shook. Shed was both fearful and filled with malicious glee. Gilbert knew the ring. Now maybe he would be a little nervous about messing with Marin Shed, or he might decide to cut a few throats. Gilbert had some of the same ego problems Crag had had.
"This should more than cover everything, Mr. Gilbert. The big, too, even with the extra points. Let's have my lien back."
Dully, Gilbert retrieved that from a box on a nearby shelf. His eyes never left the ring. Shed destroyed the lien immediately.
"Don't I still owe you a little something, though, Mr. Gilbert?"
"Yes, I think so."
"Well, I'll do my best to see you get everything you've got coming." Gilbert squinted angrily. Shed thought he saw a hint of fear, too. That pleased him. Nobody was ever afraid of Marin Shed, except maybe Asa, who did not count. Best make his exit before he stretched his luck.
"Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. See you again soon."
Passing through the outer room, he was astonished to find Gilbert's men snoring. The frog-faced man grinned. Outside, Shed paid his guardians.
"He wasn't as much trouble as I expected."
"You had us with you," the little man said. "Let's go to your place and have a beer."
One of the others observed.
"He looked like he was in shock."
The little man asked,
"How'd you ever get that far into a moneylender anyway?"
"A skirt. I thought I was going to marry her. She was just taking me for my money. I finally woke up."
His companions shook their heads. One said,
"Women. Gotta watch them, buddy. They'll pick your bones."
"I learned my lesson. Hey, drinks on the house. I've got some wine I used to keep for a special customer. He left town, so I'm stuck with it."
"That bad, eh?"
"No, that good. Nobody can afford it."
Shed spent his entire evening sipping wine, even after the sailors decided they had business elsewhere. He broke into a grin each time he recalled Gilbert's reaction to the ring.
"Gotta be careful now," he muttered. "He's as crazy as Crag."
In time, the good feeling departed. Fear took over. He'd face anything Gilbert did alone,
and he was still very much the same old Shed under the patina left by Raven and a few deals since. "Ought to haul the bastard up the hill," he muttered into his mug. Then, "Damn, I'm as bad as Raven. Worse. Raven never delivered them alive. Wonder what that bastard is doing now, with his fancy ship and slick young slot." He got himself very, very drunk, and very, very filled with self-pity. The last guest went to his bunk. The last outsider went home. Shed sat there nursing his wine and glowering at Lisa, angry with her for no reason he could define. Her body, he thought. Ripe. But she wouldn't. Too good for him. And her pushiness lately. Yeah. She studied him as she cleaned up. Efficient little witch. Better even than Darling, who had worked hard, but hadn't the economy of movement Lisa had. Maybe she did deserve to manage the place. He hadn't done such a great job. He found her seated opposite him. He glowered. She did not retreat. A hard lass, too. Wouldn't bluff. Didn't scare. Tough, buskin' bitch. Be trouble some day. "What's the matter, Mr. Shed?" "Nothing. I hear you paid Gilbert off, on a loan you took on this place. How could you take a loan on the Lily? It's been in your family for ages." "Don't give me that sentimental crap. You don't believe it." "Where did you get the money?" "Maybe you shouldn't be so nosy. Maybe nosiness could be bad for your health." He was talking surly and tough, but not meaning what he said. "You've been acting strange lately." "I was in love." "That wasn't it. What happened to that, anyway? I hear Sue disappeared. Gilbert says you did her in."
"Did what? I was over to her place today."
"You see her?"
"No. The door guard said she wasn't home, which means she didn't want to see me. Probably had somebody else up there."
"Maybe it meant she wasn't home."
Shed snorted. "I told you I don't want to talk about her anymore. Understand?"
"Sure. Tell me where you got the money."
Shed glared.
"Why?" "Because if there's more, I want a chunk. I don't want to spend my life in the buskin. I'll do whatever it takes to get out."
Shed smirked. She misunderstood.
"This job is just to keep body and soul together till I find something." "A million people have thought that, Lisa, and they've frozen to death in buskin alleys. Some make it. I don't intend to fail. Where did you get the money, Mr. Shed?"
She went for a bottle of the good wine. Vaguely, Shed thought it must be about gone. He told her about his silent partner.
"That's a crock. I've been here long enough to know that."
"Better believe it, girl," he giggled. "You keep pushing and you're liable to meet him. You won't like him, I guarantee." He recalled the tall creature telling him to hurry back.
"What happened to Sue?"
Shed tried to rise. His limbs were limp. He fell back into his seat.
"I'm drunk. Drunker than I thought. Getting out of shape."
Lisa nodded gravely.
"I loved her. I really loved her. She shouldn't ought to have done that. I would have treated her like a queen. Would have gone into hell for her. Almost did."
He chuckled.
"Went in with her. Oops."
"Would you do that for me, Mr. Shed?"
"What?"
"You're always trying to get me. What's it worth?" Shed leered.
"Don't know. Can't tell till I've tried you."
"You don't have anything to give me, old man."
"Know where to get it, though."
"Where?" Shed just sat there, grinning, a bit of drool trailing from one corner of his mouth.
"I give up. You win. Come on, I'll help you get up the stairs before I go home."
The climb was epic. Shed was one drink short of passing out. When they reached his room, he just toppled into bed.
"Thanks," he mumbled. "What are you doing?"
"You have to get undressed."
"Guess so."
He made no effort to help.
"What are you doing now? Why are you grabbing me like that?"
"You want me, don't you?"
A moment later, she was in bed with him, rubbing her nakedness against his. He was too drunk to make anything of the situation. He held her and became maudlin, spouting his trials. She played to it. Chapter 29 Juniper, Payoff. Shed sat up so suddenly, his head twisted around. Somebody started beating drums inside. He rolled to the edge of the bed and was noisily sick, and then became sick in another way, with terror.
I told her the whole damned thing.
He tried to jump up. He had to get out of Juniper before the Inquisitors came. He had gold. A foreign captain might take him south. He could catch up with Raven and Asa. He settled onto the cot, too miserable to act.
"I'm dying," he muttered. "If there's a hell, this is what it's going to be like."
Had, he told her. He thought so. And for nothing. He had gotten nothing.
"Maren Shed, you were born to lose. When will you ever learn?"
He rose once more, cautiously, and fumbled through his hiding place. The gold was there. Maybe he hadn't told her everything. He considered the amulet. Lisa could follow the trail blazed by Sue. If she hadn't told anybody yet. But she would be wary, wouldn't she? Be hard to catch her off guard, even assuming he could find her.
"My head! Gods! I can't think!"
There was a sudden racket downstairs. "Damn," he muttered. "She left the place unlocked. They'll steal everything." Tears rolled down his cheeks. Such an end he had come to. Maybe that was Bullock and his thugs knocking around down there. Best to meet his fate. Cursing, he eased into his clothing, began the long journey downstairs.
"Good morning, Mr. Shed," Lisa called brightly. "What will you have for breakfast?"
He stared, gulped, finally stumbled to a table, sat there with his head in his hands, ignoring the amused stare of one of his companions of the Gilbert adventure.
"A little hungover, Mr. Shed?" Lisa asked.
"Yes." His own voice sounded thunderous.
"I'll mix you something my father taught me to make. He's a master drunkard, you know."
Shed nodded weakly. Even that proved painful. Lisa's father was one reason he had hired her. She needed all the help she could get. Another of his charities gone sour. She returned with something so foul even a sorcerer would not have touched it.
"Drink fast. It goes down easier that way."
I can imagine. Half praying it would poison him, he gulped the malodorous concoction. After gasping for breath, he murmured,
"When are they coming? How long do I have?"
"Who, Mr. Shed?"
"The Inquisitors. The Law. Whoever you called."
"Why would they come here?"
Painfully, he raised his gaze to meet hers. She whispered,
"I told you I'll do anything to get out of the buskin. This is the chance I've been looking for. We're partners now, Mr. Shed. 50-50.
Shed buried his head in his hands and groaned. It would never end, not till it devoured him. He cast curses on Raven and all his house. The common room was empty. The door was closed.
"First we have to take care of Gilbert," Lisa said.
Shed bobbed his head, refused to look up.
"That was stupid, giving him jewelry he would recognize. He'll kill you if we don't kill him first."
Again Shed bobbed his head.
"Why me?" he whined to himself. "What have I done to deserve this?"
"And don't you think you can get rid of me the way you did Sue and that blackmailer? My father has a letter he'll take to Bullock if I disappear."
"You're too smart for your own good."
And, "It won't be long till winter."
"Yes, but we won't do it Raven's way. Too risky and too much work. We'll get charitable. Let all the derelicts in. One or two can disappear every night."
"You're talking murder."
"Who'll care? Nobody.
They'll be better off themselves. Call it mercy."
"How can anybody so young be so heartless?"
You don't prosper in the buskin if you have a heart, Mr. Shed. We'll fix a place where the outside cold will keep them till we get a wagon load. We can take them up maybe once a week.
Winter is
going to be my last season in the buskin. I won't do it.
Yes, you will, or you'll hear from Bullock. You don't have a choice. You have a partner.
God deliver me from evil.
Are you less evil than me? You killed 5 people.
4, he protested weakly.
You think Sue is still alive? You're splitting hairs. Any way you look at it, you're guilty of murder. You're a murderer so dumb about money he doesn't have a Gersh to his name. So stupid he keeps getting tangled with Sue's and Gilbert's. Mr. Shed, they only execute you once.
How to argue with sociopathic reasoning? Lisa was the heart of Lisa's universe. Other people existed only to be exploited.
There are some others we should think about after Gilbert. That man of Craggs who got away. He knows there was something strange about the bodies not turning up. He hasn't talked, or it would be all over the buskin. But someday he might. And there's the man you hired to help you with the blackmailer.
She sounded like a general planning a campaign, planning murder wholesale. How could anybody?
I want no more blood on my hands, Lisa. How much choice do you have?
He could not deny that Gilbert's death had meaning in the equation of his survival. And after Gilbert, one more. Before she destroyed him, she would let her guard down sometime. What about that letter? Damn, maybe her father had to go first. The trap was vast and had no apparent exits.
This could be my only chance to get out, Mr. Shed. You better believe I'm going to grab it.
Shed shook his lethargy, leaned forward, stared into the fireplace. His own survival came first. Gilbert had to go. That was definite.
What about the Black Castle? Had he told her about the amulet?
He could not recall. He had to imply the existence of a special pass key, else she might try to kill and sell him. He would become a danger to her once they implemented her plan.
Yes, for sure. She would try to rid herself of him once she'd made her connection with the things in the castle.
So add another to his must-kill list.
Damn. Raven had done the smart thing, the only thing possible, had taken the only exit. Leaving Juniper was the only way out.
Going to have to follow him, he muttered. There isn't any choice.
What?
Just muttering, girl. You win. Let's get to work on Gilbert.
Good. Stay sober and get up early tomorrow. You'll need to watch the Lily while I check something out.
All right.
Time you pulled your own weight again anyway.
Probably so.
Lisa eyed him suspiciously. Good night, Mr. Shed.
Lisa told Shed, It's set up. He'll meet me at my place tonight, alone.
You bring your wagon. I'll make sure my dad isn't around.
I hear Gilbert won't go anywhere without a bodyguard now.
He will tonight. He's supposed to pay me 10 leva to help get control of the Lily. I let him think he's going to get something else, too.
Shed's stomach growled.
What if he catches on?
There's 2 of us and 1 of him.
How did such a chicken shit manage everything you have?
He had dealt with the lesser fear, but he kept that thought to himself. There was no point giving Lisa more handles than she had. It was time to find handles on her.
Aren't you scared of anything, child?
Poverty, especially of being old and poor. I get the gray shakes whenever I see the custodians haul some poor old stiff out of an alley.
Yeah, that I can understand.
Shed smiled thinly. That was a beginning.
Shed stopped the wagon, glanced at the window of a downstairs rear apartment. No candle burning there. Lisa hadn't yet arrived. He snapped the traces, rolled on. Gilbert might have scouts out. He was not stupid. Shed pulled around a kink in the alleyway, strolled back, pretending to be a drunk. Before long, someone lighted a candle in the apartment.
heart hammering, Shed slunk to the rear door. It was unlocked, as promised. Maybe Gilbert was stupid. Gently, he eased inside. His stomach was a mess of knots. His hands shook. A scream lay coiled in his throat. This was not the Marin Shed who had fought Crag and his troops. That Shed had been trapped and fighting for his life. He had had no time to think himself into a panic. This Shed did. He was convinced he would foul up. The apartment consisted of two tiny rooms. The first, behind the door, was dark and empty. Shed moved through carefully, eased to a ragged curtain. A man murmured beyond the doorway. Shed peeked. Gilbert had disrobed and was resting a knee on a bedraggled excuse of a bed. Lisa was in it, covers pulled to her neck, pretending second thoughts. Gilbert's withered, wrinkled, blue-veined old body contrasted bizarrely with her youth. Gilbert was angry. Shed cursed, mutely. He wished Lisa would stop playing games. Always she had to do more than go directly to her goal. She had to manipulate along the way, just to satisfy something within herself. He wanted to get it over. Lisa pretended surrender, made room for Gilbert beside her. The plan was for Shed to strike once Lisa enwrapped Gilbert in arms and legs. He decided to play a game of his own. He let it wait. He stood there grinning while her face betrayed her thoughts, while Gilbert sated himself upon her. Finally, Shed moved in. Three quick, quiet steps. He looped a garrote around Gilbert's skinny neck, leaned back. Lisa tightened her grip. How small and mortal the moneylender appeared. How unlike a man feared by half the buskin. Gilbert struggled, but could not escape. Shed thought it would never end. He hadn't realized it took so long to strangle a man. Finally, he stepped back. His shakes threatened to overcome him. "Get him off!" Lisa squealed. Shed rolled the corpse aside. "Get dressed. Come on, let's get out of here. He might have some men hanging around. I'll get the wagon." He swept to the door, peeped into the alleyway. Nobody around. He recovered the wagon fast. "Come on," he snapped when he returned and found Lisa still undressed. "Let's get him out of here." She could not tear herself away. Shed shoved clothing into her arms, slapped her bare behind. "Get moving, damn it." She dressed slowly. Shed fluttered to the door. Checked the alley. Still no one around. He scooted back to the body, hustled it to the wagon, and covered it with a tarp. Funny how they seemed lighter when they were dead. Back inside, "Will you come on? I'll drag you out the way you are." The threat had no effect. Shed grabbed her hand, dragged her out the door. "Up!" He hoisted her onto the seat, jumped up himself. He flicked the traces. The mules plodded forward. Once he crossed the Port River Bridge, they knew where they were headed and needed little guidance. Idly, he wondered how many times they had made the journey. The wagon was halfway up the hill before he calmed down enough to study Lisa. She seemed to be in shock. Suddenly, murder was not just talk. She had helped kill. Her neck was in a noose. "Not as easy as you thought, eh?" "I didn't know it would be like that. I was holding him. I felt the life go out. It wasn't what I expected." "And you want to make a career of it. I'll tell you something. I'm not killing my customers. You want it done that way? You do it yourself." She tried a feeble threat. "You don't have any power over me anymore. Go to the Inquisitors. They'll take you to a truth-sayer, partner." Lisa shivered. Shed held his tongue till they neared the Black Castle. "Let's not play games anymore." He was considering selling her along with Gilbert, but decided he could not muster the hatred, anger, or downright meanness to do it. He stopped the mules. "You stay here. Don't get off the wagon no matter what. Understand?"
"Yes."
Lisa's voice was small and distant. Terrified, he thought. He knocked on the black gate. It swung inward. He resumed his seat and drove inside, stepped down, swung Gilbert onto a stone slab. The tall creature came forth, examined the body, looked at Lisa. "Not this one," Shed said. "She's a new partner." The creature nodded.
30.
Done.
"We need more bodies, Marin Shed. Many bodies. Our work is nearing completion. We grow eager to finish."
Shed shuddered at its tone. "There'll be more soon."
"Good. Very good. You shall be rewarded richly."
Shed shuddered again, looked around. The thing asked,
"You seek the woman? She has not yet become one with the portal."
It snapped long, yellow fingers. Feet scuffed in the darkness. Shadows came forth. They held the arms of a naked